Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines to know who is working against us, to understand why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes, whether they be political, patriotic, or religious, isn't hateful, it's not mean-spirited, it's caring and compassionate, it's appropriate. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law, because its liberating, enriching, and empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. Currently, we're evaluating one of the most interesting prophecies in the whole of the Torah and prophets, one which explains how the current conflict in Syria is going to lead to the divestiture of much of Israeli land, ultimately to a harvest of saved souls, and then to the most vicious war humanity has ever witnessed. Before we move on to that segment of our program, I would like to invite all of our listeners to participate in this discussion. They can do so, and you all can do so, in two ways. One is by calling the program. We had wonderful callers yesterday, 877-300-7645. It's toll free. The second is to join the team of listeners who are now working to get the show syndicated. You know, just calling station managers and program directors of a variety of radio stations around the country and indeed around the English-speaking world and telling them how much they benefit from and enjoy the program and encourage them to carry it as a service to their company and to their listeners. If you'd like to participate in that way, or if you have a question that you would prefer to ask privately and not on the air, you can reach me at yada@yadaya.com. Yesterday we were discussing a very interesting story. It was about Qatar. We began by demonstrating that the emir of Qatar was a complete hypocrite. That's typical in politics. It's particularly germane to most religious leaders, and in Qatar, those two enemies of humanity coincide. You see, Qatar is an absolute dictatorship. There is no electoral process. Political parties are expressly forbidden, and all power resides with the emir. And yet, this man, who is very religious, he is an extremist in Western parlance. In actuality, he is a fundamentalist Muslim. He has seen fit to provide weapons to any fundamentalist Islamic group willing to overthrow a dictator in any Islamic country. And so he is ruffling a lot of feathers. And he has a publicity machine at his side. Quick draw. It's called Al Jazeera. If you've ever watched the Al Jazeera news network, you are witnessing the mouthpiece of the emir of Qatar. Now, he is particularly concerning because he is the man who was responsible for providing the weapons to the Islamic jihadists who not only overturned and killed Gaddafi in Libya, but also who killed the American ambassador and three other Americans in Benghazi, Libya. He is responsible for providing the weapons now that are being deployed throughout northern and central Africa, which have been used by Islamic Mujahideen to murder tens of thousands of Africans. Mali, the Central African Republic, come to mind. Boko Haram in Nigeria. He is also responsible for arming the Sunni Mujahideen who have turned the once peaceful uprising in Syria into a proxy war where now some 200,000 people have died, and ultimately millions will die. This is an extraordinarily important, not in the sense of good, but in the sense of evil, deadly regimes on the planet. Continuing with the article, it reads, and this is from Reuters, Qatar finds that its friends, and it sees its friends in Syria as freedom fighters. No, they don't. That's how they are presented to the West. That's not how they view them. They know who they are. They know what they're after. There are no illusions in this regard. The only illusions are to feed misperceptions in the West. They know that they are Mujahideen. They know that they are jihadists. They know that they are fundamentalist Muslims. But yet the West is willing to buy the propaganda that is spewed out by Al Jazeera, and they actually believe that the Emir of Qatar views those that is providing weapons to in Syria as freedom fighters, not militants. Utter nonsense. The person who wrote this article should be ashamed. Its official line is that Qatar supports only the moderate armed groups, also backed also by Saudi Arabia and the West. That's not true. And anyone with half a brain knows that it's not true. It shouldn't even be written. And yet fighters inside Syria and diplomats and analysts in the region say that Doha, that's the capital of the postage stamp fiefdom known as Qatar, also provides help to groups that have coordinated tactically on the ground with Al-Qaeda affiliates and which share their ambition to create a strict Islamic state. Well, that's partially true. This also provides is utter nonsense. There are no alternatives amongst the Sunni rebels trying to overthrow Bashar al-Assad and to establish a fundamentalist Islamic state under Sharia law. There are no freedom fighters. There are no moderates. There are no democracy-loving individuals. There are only fundamentalist Muslim jihadists. That's it. I mean, there isn't a single soul, not one person, amongst the tens of thousands of jihadi-wielding militants that could be considered a moderate. And so why they would say also provides, which is grotesquely misleading. That makes it sound like, oh, the majority of what they're doing is really good. These are freedom fighters, democracy-loving, pro-West, pro-tolerance individuals that are just trying to rid the world of a ruthless dictator. And so we ought to help them. Otherwise, that ruthless dictator will mow them down mercilessly. Rubbish, all of it. There are no moderates fighting Assad. None. The only moderates are at the side of Assad. They know that if the fundamentalist Muslims prevail, they're as good as dead. Now, there isn't any group fighting in Syria that coordinates tactically on the ground with Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda affiliates. There are no Al-Qaeda representatives, no Al-Qaeda commanders, no Al-Qaeda affiliates in Syria. This myth that Al-Qaeda is responsible for jihad, for mujahideen, for terrorism is utter nonsense. It's just not true. The motivation for all of the atrocities perpetrated in Syria by both sides is Islam. Full stop. Muhammad was a terrorist. He led 75 terrorist raids in the last 10 years of his life. He established Islam on terrorism. He said, I have become victorious with terror. He was a slave trader. He was a kidnapper for ransom. He used terrorism to finance Islam's development. He never fought a defensive battle in his life. He never fought against a military. He always wielded his jihadist militants against unarmed and defenseless civilians. These terrorists, these Islamic Mujahideen inside of Syria are following Mohammed's example, and it does not matter if they are Hezbollah and Shia or if they are Sunni and associated with the Islamic Front or the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. Their motivation, their goals, their ambitions, their inspiration, their constitution is the Quran and the Hadith. It's the example of Muhammad. Sunni Islam is named Sunni because it's based upon the Sunnah of Muhammad. The Sunnah is the example of Muhammad. It's his words and deeds, which are articulated in the Hadith, which are the oral reports from Muhammad and his companions, jihadists. They depict Muhammad engaged almost full-time in acts of terrorism. It's this disconnect amongst journalists, amongst the military, amongst politicians, between Islam and jihadists, between Islam and Mujahideen, between Islam and terrorism, that is the most debilitating myth, the most deadly myth in the world today. They want to associate this bad behavior, this deadly and destructive occupation with Al-Qaeda, and yet Al-Qaeda is utterly irrelevant and meaningless. But yet it persists. What's interesting, of course, here is that both sides, both of the two largest, the most effective Sunni rebel organizations, are at each other's throat. One has been summarily dismissed as never being part of Al-Qaeda, and the other one has no links to Al-Qaeda. We're going to examine in detail, as this program continues during its first hour, the allegiance of the Islamic Front, which is the largest, most ruthless, most successful of all of the rebel units. It's actually an association of rebel Mujahideen groups in Syria. And we will examine who they say is their inspiration. We'll be back in a moment. Fighters inside of Syria, we should call them by their religious name, Mujahideen. Mujahid is the singular. Mujahideen is the plural. It means holy fighters. They are jihadists, which are those who fight in Allah's cause. Inside of Syria, and diplomats and analysts in the region say that Doha, we're speaking of the capital of Qatar, also provides help to groups that have coordinated tactically on the ground with Al-Qaeda affiliates and which share their ambition to create an Islamic State. As we were discussing, the Al-Qaeda reference is a red herring. It has absolutely nothing to do with what's transpiring in Syria or any place else in the Islamic world. The also is completely misleading because it infers that the majority of the weaponry that Qatar is providing goes to the Free Syrian Army, for example, which is a myth that you seldom see promoted these days. The last I heard that myth promoted, it was by Senator John McClown of Arizona. As it relates to their ambition to create a strict Islamic State, there's only one kind of an Islamic State, and that's strict, because Sharia law is strict. The Quran is strict. The Hadith is strict. There is no tolerance in Islam. You cannot be a moderate or peaceful Muslim, then survive. According to the Quran, if you are peaceful, you've ceased to be a Muslim, and you must be killed by jihadi Muslims so that Allah can torture you in the hottest places in hell. An Arab diplomatic source said Qatar knew that it was, quote, playing with fire, but this is what Qatar does. They gain the confidence of powerful extremist groups, which they believe gives them a diplomatic edge over any other country, end quote. Yeah, doing what the United States CIA used to do, which is to use the Machiavellian strategy of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And since the Emir of Qatar sees himself as the ultimate Messiah of Islam, the man responsible for overturning secular Islamic countries and replacing them with strict Islamic Sharia devoted regimes, every country in the Middle East that does not suit his perfect model of Islam and the establishment of the caliphate, he wants to overturn, and he's going to use the most ruthless enemies of those regimes to get that job done. A Gulf-based diplomat said Qatar was still backing Islamist groups in Syria, sending them financial aid and weapons. Quote, let's face it, the Islamic groups are the strongest on the ground in Syria, and Qatar believes that after Assad, they'll rise to power, the diplomat said. Well, you know, he's mostly right. Let's face it, the Islamist groups are the strongest on the ground in Syria. That's like saying that the institutions associated with the U.S. military, the Air Force, the Navy, its Marines, and the Army are the strongest force in America. Well, they're the only force in America. That's the same thing is true here in Syria. And Syria knows full well that ultimately it's the Islamic jihadists, the fundamentalists, that are going to prevail. What they do not know is that they cannot rise to power. You know, in Libya, we don't have a government. In Libya, all we have is a country now dissected and controlled in regions by individual warlords and jihadi commanders. What little is left of Syria once this proxy war is over will be the same. The civilians will be largely gone. It will be roving bands of militants acting as if they were animals, warring occasionally with one another for larger territories, and that's it. There's going to be no country to claim authority over. Nothing but devastation is going to result from this proxy war. They give an example. They say Ahrar al-Sham, which adheres to Islam's ultra-conservative Salafi tradition, has thousands of fighters and is part of the Islamic Front, an amalgam of sixth Islamist groups. We'll return to that thought when Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break. The diplomat who was trying to elucidate the readers of this article said that an example of one of the groups that Qatar provides extensive weaponry to is Ahrar al-Sham. Now, if you listen to the diplomat, he tells you the truth right off the bat. But we're going to do a little more investigation into the name of this organization and who comprised them initially, what their objectives are. The diplomat said, matter of fact, that Ahrar al-Sham adheres to Islam's ultra-conservative Salafi tradition. Salafi is a term that's little known in the West. It should be known because, for example, in Egypt, the political party that received about a quarter of the overall votes in that country modeled themselves as Salafist. A Salafist Muslim is a fundamentalist. A Salafist Muslim is one who adheres to the example of Muhammad. A Salafist Muslim is an individual that highly values the oral tradition, the hadith that were witnessed by the companions of Muhammad. So if you want to know what drives a Salafist, what motivates a Salafist, what a Salafist is trying to achieve, who they are fighting on behalf of, you need to read their constitution, which is the Hadith collection, the oral reports from Muhammad and his companions. Salaf means ancestor. It is addressing those individuals who were the companions of Muhammad and what they had to say about Muhammad's words and deeds. Now, once you know that, the next step in understanding what it means to be a Salafist requires you to read what the Islamic Hadith reveal about Muhammad and his initial companions, so that you'll understand who it is that Qatar is providing weapons on behalf of, who is on the side of the rebels fighting to bring down the Assad government. Well, when you read the Hadith, and there are two collections that were organized chronologically. The first collection of Hadith to be committed to writing was collected chronologically as a biography of Muhammad by Ibn Ishaq. It's called the Sirah, or the biography. Its depiction of Muhammad is vile. Based upon what the Sirah has to say, the biography, the first documented evidence of the oral reports from Muhammad and his companions, Muhammad was the most repulsive man who ever lived. That's just a statement of fact. It's not my opinion. Well, it's a statement of fact if you view the following things as bad: incest, pedophilia, rape, slavery, the slave trade, kidnapping, ransom, mass murder, lying, sadistic behavior, and consistent and ruthless acts of terrorism. If you view those things as bad, then Muhammad was indeed among the most repulsive men who ever lived, perhaps the single most repulsive man who ever lived. The Salaf tradition is based entirely on following his example, which is why Islam is so despicable, so degenerate, so violent, so deadly, so destructive. That's what it means to be a Salafi. It's a fundamentalist Muslim, a Muslim who follows Muhammad's example as it is articulated in the earliest Hadith collections. Now, there are three additional Hadith collections worth noting. The second is called the Tariq, the History of Islam. It was compiled by the first to write a commentary on the Quran, Al-Tabari. It, too, is a chronological depiction of Muhammad's life. It is completely consistent with the Hadith found in Ibn Ishaq's Sirah, or biography, but it precedes it and also postdates it, or it covers a much longer period of time. Then there are two topical collections of Hadith that are universally valued in Islam. They are the topical collections compiled by Bukhari and Muslim. To have a Hadith included, or an oral report from Muhammad and his companions included in either of these topical collections, they have to be viewed by the most senior Islamic scholars as being completely consistent with the message of the Quran. And so if it is stated in the Hadith, it is deemed consistent with the Quran. And I'm here to tell you, having studied each of those and having written Prophet of Doom based upon these collections of Hadith, using the History of Islam as compiled by Tabari, using the Sirah, or biography of Muhammad, as compiled by Ibn Ishaq, and using the two topical collections of Hadith by Bukhari and Muslim, to put the Quran in chronological order and to set it into the context of Muhammad's life, that is the basis of Prophet of Doom. And having comprised a 1,000-page book using the hadith to reorder the Quran chronologically and to set it into the context of Muhammad's life, I'm here to tell you that a Salaf Muslim is an evil man, despicable in every possible way, degraded, immoral, irrational, dishonest, vicious, enraged, murderous. They must be a terrorist. There is no way to be a Salaf fundamentalist Muslim and not be a terrorist. That's what we're dealing with here. It's important that we study the information that's available to us and that we draw reasoned and informed conclusions based upon what these terms mean. So this diplomat says, an example is Arar al-Sham, which adheres to Islam's ultra-conservative Salafi tradition, has thousands of fighters, and is part of the Islamic Front, an amalgam of six Islamist groups. So let's take a moment and consider this Islamic jihadi organization. Their full name is Harakat Arar al-Sham al-Islami. It is the Islamic movement of the men of Greater Syria, al-Sham. Ahrar al-Sham is led by Hassan Abood. As of 2013, it has up to 20,000 fighters, making it among, if not the most powerful unit fighting against al-Assad. It was the principal organization operating under the umbrella of the Syrian Islamic Front. It is also a major component of the Islamic Front. The first Arar al-Sham brigades were formed just after the Egyptian Revolution. In other words, during the uprising of the Muslim Brotherhood, but before the revolution in Syria started in 2011. So they have their roots in the Muslim Brotherhood, the very organization that Hillary Clinton and Barack Hussein Obama praised, negotiated with, uplifted, supported, and encouraged. It's important to know that because America is working at cross purposes with its rhetoric and in direct opposition to its citizens' best interests. Most of the group founders, however, were Islamist political prisoners who had been detained for years in the Sednaya prison until they were released as part of an amnesty by the Syrian government in May 2011. It was the United States that promoted that gesture as a form of amnesty to release these religious and political prisoners. They then formed this terrorist organization in working with those who had come out of Egypt as part of the Muslim Brotherhood. At the time of its establishment in late 2011, Arar al-Sham consisted of about 25 rebel units spread across Syria. Since then, it has expanded, and in July of 2012, the group's website listed 50 units. And in mid-January of 2013, the number had increased to 83 units. A year later, it is much larger than that. Most of these units are headquartered in villages, but many are located in Hama and Aleppo, the regions of Syria that have been the most ravaged. Members of the group are Islamist. I'm now sharing this from Wikipedia's evaluation of this organization. I don't want to give you a jaundiced view. Arar al-Sham has claimed that it only targets government forces and militia, which would be Hezbollah, and that it has canceled several operations due to fear of civilian casualties. Well, they say so anyway. It provides humanitarian services and relief to local communities, in addition to pamphlets promoting religious commitment in daily life. This would be Islamic commitment, Islamic devotion, Islamic adherence in every aspect of one's life. Now, you might say, oh, they provide humanitarian services. Well, if you want to know why they do so, it's because you want to receive the food, you swear allegiance to them. It's going to be like what the world is going to be conditioned to do during the tribulation. You want to eat? Swear your allegiance to the new leader and their regime. Now, that's what they do with food. Now, they don't buy the food. They don't grow the food. The food is supplied by organizations like the United Nations and the West, and then it is confiscated by them, and then they use that food to win the devotion, the support of the local communities. It is exactly what Hamas does in the so-called Palestinian territories. It is why Assad's government is actually precluding the distribution of food in the affected areas, because it knows how it will be used. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the history, the motivations, the goals, if you will, of Ahrar al-Sham. According to Wikipedia, in June of 2013, this is all quite recent, so it tells us a great deal about what's going on not only in Syria, but in the Islamic world. Ahrar al-Sham had become one of the most powerful rebel factions active in the Syrian war, having been involved in every major rebel victory over the Syrian government forces since at least September of 2012, including the capture of Ar-Raqqa in March of 2013. Its operations have progressed from the use of, this is how they began, the signature move of Muslims, improvised explosive devices, which mostly kill civilians, maiming them, and small arms ambushes in early 2012, to assuming a lead role in large-scale sustained assaults on multiple fronts in 2013. It regularly deploys, catch this folks, tanks and mobile artillery, anti-tank guided missiles, and occasionally Croatian rocket and grenade launchers. You know how Senator John McClown, the idiot that I just love a war, McCain in Arizona, got in front of false Fox News and belittled everyone and said that the Free Syrian Army were good guys and freedom fighters and that they were relegated to using AK-47s. And that's all they had to fight the massive weaponry of the Syrian government. And I said at the time, you know, I've watched the video clips that these jihadists have presented online. And I'm here to tell you that they're deploying tanks, artillery, guided missiles, rocket and grenade launchers, mortars. And indeed they are. This is no longer a war where one side has a technological advantage. Through Qatar and Saudi Arabia, through Turkey and Kuwait, these Islamist organizations, these Salaf Muslims, are wielding all manner of weapons. And why that is chilling is because most of those weapons come indirectly from the United States. And ultimately, once Syria is destroyed and there are no more civilians to terrorize, those jihadists and their weapons will be turned against Israel. God is not pleased. In August of 2013, members of the brigade uploaded a video of their downing of a Syrian Air Force MiG-21. They did so with a Chinese-made FN-6 monopod, apparently becoming the first recorded kill with such a weapon. I've seen that video. That video, by the way, played in the background as Senator John McClown was making a statement that the only weapons available to the jihadists were rifles. It is the first audio, or in its first audio address, Ahrar al-Sham stated that its goal was to replace the Assad government with an Islamist state. A secular government replaced by an Islamist state. It's what's going to happen in Syria. It's going to be, it is what we did by invading Iraq. It is what happened in Libya. It is what is happening throughout the Islamic world. And if we continue to press Israel to give up the West Bank, in addition to having already been forced to give up Gaza, we're going to see Hamas establish an Islamic State. It described the uprising as a jihad against Safawi plot to spread Shia Islam and against the Shiites' state of Iran trying to spread Shia Islam throughout Iraq and Syria into Lebanon and into the West Bank and Gaza. So Arar al-Sham, in its public address, has affirmed that this is a proxy war, that they are being armed as Sunni Muslims to thwart the spread of Shia Islam, and therefore they are responding to what America caused. It was America and its invasion of Iraq that gave a Sunni secular state to Iran, and therefore radically increased Iran's Shia influence over Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and elsewhere.